Welcome to the Indisposable Podcast, produced by Upstream. I'm your host, Brooking Gatewood.
And I'm your co-host, Matt Prindeville.
Thanks for joining for another episode celebrating solutions to plastic pollution.
Hi, and welcome to the Indisposable Podcast. This is the opportunity for us to get to know amazing people, organizations, and the good work they're doing to help the planet. I'm Priscilla Johnson, Chief Strategy Officer of Upstream, and I'd like to welcome Daniel Velez to the podcast. He's a reuse entrepreneur and is here to share some insights on what his experience has been and where he sees things going. And Daniel, you were on our podcast about a year ago, and we're pleased to have you back. And last time you talked about Growly, your sustainable delivery service. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you've been doing since that time and what your thoughts are now on being a reuse entrepreneur?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Priscilla. It feels great to be here. That podcast was really good. People, you know, come up to me, LinkedIn message me, talk to me about it. But the unfortunate news that I share with them is that early 2022, I actually closed down Growly. And so we had a run from about 2018 to 2022. Just here to kind of talk about that experience. Not the likelihood of your company succeeding is not very high, which is why people usually start so many. We were a very new in the space. We were kind of a novel thing. I guess just a quick recap as to what Growly was. We were a reuse delivery service for local craft beer, coffee, and kombucha in the Phoenix market. And we're essentially the milkman of craft beer. We had a good run, but you know, we didn't hit our customer target that we wanted to, which, you know, we're really sad about, but you know, some things have to come to an end. And so anyways, that was that.
And one of the things that you shared with me prior to us going on this podcast is that, you know, your experience is such that you want to have tried. And in this particular instance, I wouldn't use the word fail. I mean, this is just a learning experience, but it's really, you're here on this podcast so that others can succeed. And I really like that spirit, and we really embrace that spirit here at Upstream. And so my question to you is, you know, so there are some people that are already in the reuse space. There's some that are similar to what Growly has done. Has there been any advancements just in the past year that A, would have maybe helped Growly, or B, that have just sort of transformed either the customer demand or the industry in general that would allow reuse to be something that customers really embrace?
Yeah, well, I think reuse is absolutely becoming more popular, and that's kind of reflected through maybe my LinkedIn isn't the safest bet to figure out what's going on in the world, but there's definitely a lot of more talk about it. I've seen it in a lot more conferences. It's pretty much at this point a main topic at Circularity, or will be at some point. And there are so many different little startups happening all over the world, and that's kind of been a really vibrant space, because you know, people or like, let's not try to recycle our way out of this problem. Let's do reuse, because it just makes sense. It just seems so much more practical. And let's try to bring it to X, Y, and Z market. And people are doing that all over the place. And so that's been really cool to see. And I know that a lot of people have reached out to me, and I've, you know, advised people, coached people through their ideas. To make sure that, you know, people succeed in this space. You know, some of us have to fail so others could succeed. And I definitely cared. You know, I started Growly for the most part because I wanted to have a scalable reuse company. I wanted to see reuse happen and become the norm. And even though it's sad that it closed down, there's a brighter vision now of that happening just because so many other people are doing it and people are having a lot of success with it. So that's been really awesome to see. In terms of different kind of policies, et cetera, customer attitudes that might have helped Growly, unfortunately for Growly, we were very niche. And so we were delivering mostly local craft beer. And we, because of certain alcohol and legal challenges, and even financial challenges, it was, we couldn't do on demand. And that was kind of against our model because we wanted to deliver once a week for environmental reasons and also for financial reasons. And also because we had to pick up beer and coffee from all over the valley and then deliver it all over the valley. And so it made sense to scale everything in one day for that route to make sense. And so a customer could order something, live in the East Valley, order something from the West Valley, and it would be the same price just because everything was scaled in one day. And so very niche one day delivery service. And so, yeah, it wasn't necessarily that there was the system would have not worked. It was just such a small market for what we were offering.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, you talk about, I know you have an upcoming piece that you're going to be publishing, and you talk about that piece of where people really care about sustainability and people don't. And you actually have a 90-10 rule on that, which I find very interesting. Do you mind talking about that?
Yeah. And if you're riding your bicycle right now, maybe stop pedaling and pull off to the side. if you're walking, stand still. The truth is that most people don't care about sustainability and reuse. We do. I mean, you're listening to a podcast. This is primarily about reuse, right? A lot of people that listen work in this. We care. We're really value-driven in that way. But consumers are making decisions. Most of them are making decisions very quickly for convenience, lifestyle, status, et cetera. And so when we struggled a lot of this with Growly, too. So I guess let me go into that a little bit. We had struggled with who are we? Are we an alcohol delivery service or are we a reuse delivery service? And we'd have these long conversations and then come back and have even longer conversations, sometimes with coffee, sometimes with beer, and just try to figure this out. Because if we were just an alcohol delivery service, what's the difference between us and other really popular alcohol delivery services? But if we were a reuse service, it's not like people, there's, anyways, on Google, you could kind of search what people are searching for on Google as just an indicator of what the market is asking for, because people ask a lot of things on Google. And people aren't asking, what's a reuse delivery service near me? And so if we would market ourselves that way, we would have not really got much of a market because there wasn't any. You know, ultimately, the customer decides what they want from you. And so we ended up being the milkman of craft beer. It kind of hit both the reuse, but also got to the beer. And in our customer discovery process, there was once you told them the milkman of X, they're like, OK, I kind of get it. Even though the milkman was, you know, really popular a long time ago, people still get the concept. But even on our website, we're like, okay, what do we want to put first? Do we want to mention that we are a reuse company first? Or we just want to show the picture of the latest beers? you know, customers, they go on your website, you have about a second and a half for them to decide whether they want to spend more time on here or whether they want to leave. And so that first thing that they look at is super important. So anyways, that's like, kind of running a business, at some point you become super tactical into all the decisions that you're making, even if they seem really, really small. But for the 90-10 rule, I say that 90% of people don't care about sustainability, reuse, circularity, those type of deals. And if you market for sustainability, for reuse and whatnot, you're missing that 90% because that's not really what they're looking for. But if you market your product to the 90%, which is what we tried to do, it's like, here, get some beer. That 10%, the sustainability focus, you're not going to miss because they're going to know and care enough to find out that you're like a sustainability focused service and they're going to be a customer of yours anyway. So if you market to the 90%, you're really marketing to the 100%. And it didn't matter if a Growly customer cared about reuse or or just beer, they were participating in a reuse service and therefore accomplishing our goal of eliminating single-use packaging, even if they didn't care about it or not. So we just want to, I guess my advice was to make sure that you're marketing to the largest swath of potential customers, because ultimately that's going to be the driver for adoption, even if people don't inherently care about the your specific mission. I mean, some companies have a mission statement that seems really off to the things that they're actually doing and their kind of core products. And Growly was sort of in that way. It's like, yeah, our mission is to eliminate single-use packaging, but we want you to buy the newest, coolest logo craft beer is what we were selling. It seems misaligned, but at the end of the day, we were accomplishing that mission.
And that's great. I mean, that's really good perspective on marketing to that 90%. And then I'm kind of imagining it, like when people found out that you actually were sort of a sustainable company, that made it even better for them and even sweeter. And that establishes that customer loyalty. And so one of the things, actually, I was just at Green Biz a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about marketing. And marketing, you know, XYZ, you know, reuse is what we're talking about now. And how the messaging around what you're selling is everything. A long time ago, they used to say, you know, the medium's the message. And it was like how you were telling people. And then now it's more about, well, what are you doing? And then not only what are you doing, but what are you doing now for the planet? But then there's this sneaky piece of something called convenience that comes in. And that really seems to be the crux, I think, around, you know, the circularity movement and the sustainable products. Is your product actually convenient to the customers? I mean, if we're talking about in this reuse space, you know, folks are now talking about how to actually even build out further a reuse infrastructure, maybe locally, regionally, nationally, and what that would look like. But it always comes back to the point of like, are you serving the customer now whose idea of what something they'd want to buy is really mainly driven by convenience?
Yes. And I actually like to add about that, you know, the convenience element. I've heard some people say, and it's an ambitious and it's in a sense a little utopian and impractical and unrealistic, that reuse could be as convenient as single use. And it can never be as convenient as single use because people just litter single use all the time. And that is the highest level of convenience. That's not a behavior anybody wants, but it's a behavior that's well practiced. If you would walk any trail in the United States or go anywhere in the world, really. But the good news is that reuse has an inherent benefit over single use. And that is that reuse could provide an experience that single use cannot. And that's because people are sharing the cost of the packaging. And so you could have a really expensive packaging, a high-tech packaging, a beautiful looking packaging. And customers could share the cost of it. And that could be sometimes cost competitive with what single use could be. But even if it's a little bit more expensive, if it's providing another value to the customer, I believe people will be willing to pay for that. And we tested that out with Growly. We had high-tech growlers. And high-tech growlers keeps beer fresh for 5 times longer than a typical growler or a glass growler or a basic growler. And 5 times longer is the difference between 3 days and 2 weeks. And so that's a good benefit to have. And would you pay a couple extra dollars to have your beer fresh for, you know, a week and a half more? And it looks cool and it mimics the taproom experience. We got a resounding yes. People love the high-tech growlers and they love showing it off at parties. And the beer was fresher. It tasted better. Local beer is already expensive. And so why not put it in a high-tech growler? And so that is definitely an inherent benefit that reuse has over single use. And the kind of this view about like convenience, people are also selling value. And this kind of makes me think about Domino's pizza. you know, Domino's, they sell their pizza in a single-use cardboard box. There's nothing special about the box. It's the same box that everybody else is using. It has the word Domino's on it, but that's pretty much it. But what they sell people on is your pizza is going to arrive really hot because, you know, the primary packaging, the cardboard box that the pizza is inside of a secondary packaging, which is this like heat insulated, probably really expensive, lack of a better term, like box that they put in their cars. And that keeps the pizza hot the entire time. And so that's kind of they're making sure that it's warm on the way to your house. But what better way to have a pizza piping hot arriving at your door if it's made from a durable stainless steel, something that isn't that heavy? Anyway, some type of durable pizza box. So it could be hot for hours sitting on your counter. And anytime you wanted to get it, you could get a hot box. Because as soon as they give you that pizza at your door, that thing's going to get cold in 30 minutes, if that. And so people will pay to get it a little bit hotter. People will be paid to get a better experience. I mean, there's so many of these takeout deliveries that deliver in single use. And the single use packaging is really, it's bad. It's not bad for the environment. We already know that. It's a bad experience. We have this local Indian restaurant that we love ordering from, and it's got a lot of like oils, juices, flavors in it, whatnot. We get it. It's in this really bad plastic container that you always spill because it feels like it's melting. And it's just a bad experience. Well, we like that to be in something that keeps it hot for longer, that's more durable, that's easier to pour, that's a better experience for us that are ordering takeout and want to watch, you know, a baseball game during a long week. Absolutely. And so I believe customers will pay for that. And I believe that's kind of the future of reuse. And that's not to say that we don't have to take this initial step of having kind of mass produced reusable packaging that doesn't provide as much of this experience that I'm talking about, just to enter the market. I mean, when Growly entered the market, we had a glass growler. That was the only thing that we had, not very good, not whatnot. And a lot of people are kind of doing like either cups and takeouts that are, in a sense, mimic the single-use experience. But don't forget, I think that next evolution of reuse, and I think what really is exciting about it is that inherent benefit, that it could really lift that customer experience. And then people would be, you know, dying to pay for that option.
You know, Daniel, you have totally inspired me. First of all, you've made me hungry talking about the Indian food. And second of all, you made me thirsty because you talked about beer to begin with. But not only that, you talked about the experience of having something fresh, of having something hot, of having this thoughtfulness put into packaging that matters. And packaging, as you say, as a service, that's what Growly was. And people that are actually willing to pay a little bit more for it. And it's not like twice the cost of the product. It was maybe a couple dollars more to have that experience. So, you know, just in the last, 3 minutes that you were talking, you know, I was nodding my head, I was salivating, and I was thinking of what an evolution that would be for customers to experience reuse. And if we don't lead with reuse, right, with the marketing piece, because you talked about that, market to the 90% of folks who just want a good experience with their food, with their drink, with whatever, with their clothes, with their coffee beans, because I know Growly delivered that too. And if we know that this is a market or at least a feature of product that the market demands, why don't we see more of it?
Yeah, well, I think we will. You know, keep your third eye open. Good, awesome, reusable packaging is coming to a town near you and replacing the single-use crap that you get on your Uber Eats app. So we're coming.
That is really inspirational. And it actually speaks to the fact that this reuse industry is growing and people are more, I believe, dedicated and in terms of like, you know, taking their life savings now and putting their all into growing these reuse infrastructures. And I can think of a couple of companies offhand, you know, like Our Cup and those of that ilk that are trying to make a go of building an infrastructure around this, building wash stations, whether they be mobile or stationary. There's talk in a lot of different municipalities about how to retrofit existing facilities themselves. I know Perpetual is working on a four-city strategy where they're rolling out reuse and working directly with the municipalities and governments. And so it's really inspiring to see this. And then now, you know, there's the talk of, you know, building standards around reuse packaging in and through what PR3 is doing. So I see what you're saying about where we're going. So it's not like we're regressing from.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. I mean, I just like to find out more about, you know, the life of an entrepreneur, knowing that you've tried this in a real sense, because I mean, did you have to go out and get like a liquor license to do this? Or was there any special permission or permits that you had to get to deliver alcohol?
Welcome to the wild, wild west of Arizona. no, sorry, I say that in chug and cheek. The alcohol laws in Arizona are very archaic and very annoying. We very strategically did not, first of all, it was cost prohibitive for us to get a liquor license. So the way our internal system work was like pretty complicated in order to, it's not skirt the law, it's be in compliance with the law. And so we were an independent contractor for each of our breweries. From a liquor license perspective, you're an employee of the brewery in terms of kind of handling alcohol. And so we, every brewery got paid directly. We had multiple customers' credit cards on files with every brewery and every vendor, including us. And we kind of created this ad hoc system to make it seamless for the customer. We use Shopify for our website. So a customer would come, Shopify is really popular. That experience felt really easy. I would then go into a massive Excel sheet and log into six different Square's accounts and put together an invoice and then let them know we're going to put your credit card on file when we see you, et cetera, et cetera. And so anyways, it was very complicated, but no, we didn't have a liquor license. Our next step would have been to acquire one, but we never, you know, got to that point.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of learning though that you're giving to our audience right now, and you had touched on something earlier when it comes to either setting up your entire platform, because you know Growly was this sort of all-encompassing platform, right? And there's something and there's some efficiencies to actually, instead of making a brand new system, creating a brand new system, finding a place for your new entrepreneurial idea within one that already exists. So can you talk a little bit about that and how these sort of up and coming kind of reuse startups, how you see them leveraging this and maybe even for Growly, if, you know, should there be a Growly 2.0?
Yeah. So, you know, the dream was always for Growly to scale up and, you know, for me to be at Greenbiz talking about how successful we are and how much we changed the world and whatnot. But the Growly, one of the reasons why we became kind of an all-encompassing business, we were pretty much totally vertical except for the alcohol aspect of it, was that we believed that model could scale to different cities. So if it became successful in Phoenix being kind of a tough market for sustainability services in a sense. It's not our neighbors in Colorado. It's not our neighbors in California. We felt like it could scale everywhere. So it was like, okay, we could have a model that replicates and then boom, 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 here we go. So that was one reason we did that way. Another reason simply might've just been ego. I mean, we just wanted to be in control of what we were doing. So we managed our website. A part of this was that breweries didn't want to put that stuff on their website. And so it's like, okay, we have to manage that part. When talking with the breweries, we're like, hey, you guys all clean growlers all the time. Would you guys clean the growlers? They're like, we want nothing to do with cleaning growlers. We hate clean growlers. Okay, well, let's incorporate that into our process as well. And then all of a sudden, we kind of, and there was no reuse delivery service. And some boom, all of a sudden, we kind of had to do everything. And it was partially because we asked the customers what they had wanted. You could only buy beer off of our website. We had no brick and mortar store. And so purely a delivery service, had no location, had no liquor license. We ran very lean and were very strategic in how we kind of spent our money. Hence why we, part of the reason why we survived as long as we did. And then we would deliver once a week. So even our logistics system was pretty lean. And I don't want to say easy to manage, but you know, one day is easier than 7 days a week. So we were the entire system. And in order for us to grow, the platform of Growly had to grow. And we were, to use like a entrepreneur business term, we were a double-sided marketplace. And so we brought together the vendors, that being the breweries and the coffee shops. We brought them together with the consumers that were looking to buy this stuff. And then we facilitated that whole exchange. And so you can think about it like eBay. eBay doesn't really sell stuff, but they connect people wanting to sell stuff with people wanting to buy stuff. And so we just provided the packaging and we had the platform. In order for that to scale, we had to do that. We were direct to consumer business. And so, you know, a small team trying to build up this platform, granted, we were on our breweries' websites and all this stuff. You know, we had, you know, local media attention, et cetera. But we can never really scale the way we did. So kind of towards the thinking about pivoting, it's like, wouldn't we have more of an impact for reuse if instead of people buying reuse kind of through us, it was just like they bought any other beer from these local breweries? They're like, you go to the beer shop, you buy beer, it's in reuse, and boom, that would be pretty simple. Most breweries sell their beer to distributors. So they make a bunch of beer. They have a canning company come in and can the whole thing. And then they put that in every grocery store kind of in the region or, you know, across the United States. We were our own thing, couldn't really scale that much, but had a lot of control. But then it was like, would it have been better for us to just try to make a reusable beer can and exist in an existing system? That would have been more impactful. And that's kind of a strategic point that for those people listening, where you want to place yourself at. And so, I will say building your own platform is pretty difficult. At some point, you will partner with even bigger platforms, potentially. Even towards the end, we try to partner with some big alcohol delivery companies. But at the end, it never ended up coming to fruition.
So I picked up on a couple things. Mm-hmm. One thing I picked up on was you and Growly expanding the marketplace really for these sort of local custom brewers that maybe people wouldn't hear about had it not been for your website. Regardless of whether your website was geared towards the reuse or had that component to it, it was still, you were putting it out on your platform. And I'll tell a little personal story about myself. I lived in San Francisco and I was invited to, you know, they have these really cool outings in San Francisco. And there was this one that was at a glass blowing factory, believe it or not. And then there were all of these brewers that came from around the area. And this is probably 8 years ago. So if that brewer is listening right now, listen real closely. That beer that you made with bananas was bananas. It was so good. I still remember it to this day. And it was just one of those things where, you know, custom brewing and brewers are, and those local, those vibes that you get from them are just so special. And I have been in search of this banana beer ever since then. I don't even know where if I could find it again, but I bet you if it was to exist, it'd probably be on a site like Growly because you're opening up a market. So, you know, I really want to talk about how this economy, the local, the regional economy itself is being supported through reuse and how that grows jobs and how that grows an economy. And it grows it without people even really thinking so much about it. But it's one of those ways where, you know, this is an economic development story as much as it is about sustainability.
Yeah, and I think anybody that kind of sits down and really thinks about reuse and circularity comes to the kind of the same conclusion that, you know, this has to be local, regional, just because, you know, it just, there's a couple reasons. You need the stuff back, right? And so you want to limit the amount of travel that you want, you know, your packagings to come back. And then they need to be redistributed. And so you also want to limit the travel that they're being kind of redistributed. And that just works better on a local and regional scale. I mean, when we had a growler go from inventory to a brewery, customer's house, to being cleaned, to one, two, three, and then boom, boom, boom. And we were just reusing and reusing. And that growler never left the city limits and was kind of creating economic activity along the whole way. If we were to scale, we would have definitely, you know, partnered with somebody to clean them. And so then, you know, we're kind of also providing some more jobs there. You know, with an aluminum can, you know, that's a single-use aluminum can, you know, that's being shipped in from somewhere else. It's being used here, and probably, I mean, depending on where it's being used, you know, if it's at a college ASU tailgate, it may be crushed on somebody's skull and then drunk and then thrown on the ground somewhere, and maybe hopefully entered a recycling system of sorts. And then even if that were true, you know, that's leaving the city limits and that's going to a global recycling market, you know, to hopefully be recycled. But that, the jobs entering, the jobs leaving, because anyways, you could just follow the packaging and then you will find the jobs that it's going. And so and alongside that, following the money. And so, yeah, the, you know, reuse is absolutely, there's a lot of synergy, hence why we targeted breweries. That, you know, they're local. We're local. Packagings are remaining local. Local organizations really dug the idea. People who were local dug the idea. So there was definitely a lot of synergies that we had played there.
Yeah, that's really good insight, because it really speaks to the business case that, you know, companies are now trying to establish for themselves as to whether they or not they want to get into the reuse game. And when I say companies, I mean, you know, major brands. And it seems as if the conversation right now is, well, you know, we have the supply chain and the supply chain is working right now. We want to keep it like it is. You know, we know where our plastic manufacturers are. We have the die cast and the molds, and we know exactly how many we need and in what region we need them in. And the specifications have already been set and the supply chain is set, and we know where the syrup comes from, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's not just beveraging, it's food, you know. So there's all of these inputs that come into making a product. And then to change the supply chain along the way, it's very disruptive. And so the question becomes, how hard will it be to change an entire system that already has these, if there are any externalities, already built in? How hard would it be to change a system that already has, like you say, you follow the packaging, you follow the money, that has jobs tied to it? How hard of it would be to change a system where you have already a very well-defined balance sheet or P&L or profit and loss statement associated with it, and then upend it with something, this little thing called reuse or the milkman model? And of course, you know, we're, you know, Upstream is 20 years deep into, you know, the policy making and the community building around reuse. And, you know, we're solutioneers. You know, we say that, you know, you can do anything. And we hope we have the right people. We hope we attract the right people. And I know the folks that are listening to this podcast are saying, well, hey, you know, I'm part of the solution. So let's talk about that transition from the existing supply chain to where we know it needs to be on this local level, and then on the regional, and then finally on the national level.
Yeah, I mean, difficult. We don't got to beat around the bush here. That's definitely a difficult thing. But, you know, industries, the world, governance have always changed and reinvented itself over time. You know, these supply chains didn't exist before they existed. And, you know, with the pandemic, that's also like disrupted a lot of that stuff. I mean, it's also going to evolve as well. And the players will also evolve as well. I mean, if you look at historically the S&P, you know, 500, and you pick those, let's say the S&P 10, you pick those top 10 companies, and you kind of fast forward every 15 years, starting at the turn of the 1900s, that list is going to look different almost every single 10 years. And so, you know, there's different players, people's attitudes change. And so, you know, these things don't tend to happen immediately. And also these things don't tend to happen often even intentionally. So, you know, it just, you know, based on markets, based on innovation, based off people's attitudes, you know, based on governments, things will change. And considering that, you know, pretty much every country in the world has agreed upon climate change and reuse being an aspect of that strategy, alongside with, you know, energy, transportation, et cetera, et cetera, things will change. And so there's one thing that has always been constant in the world is change. And so it's difficult if you're thinking about, hey, let's do this tomorrow. Right. Those things are changing, and that kind of always happens.
And that, you're absolutely right, is where we are. And that innovation piece, I think, is what's so exciting, and what is exciting in what you were employing at Growly. So you had a piece of innovation that was fairly unique to Growly. Can you talk a little bit about that? And can you talk about the innovations that you've seen since the last time that we talked to you that I think really could benefit what we were talking about, building that local, regional reuse economy?
Yeah. And so, you know, Growly started off as a like consultancy. We were actually called Circle Blue before. We were consulting with school districts, cities, and whatnot. And then eventually had decided, I mean, reuse is the best way of doing this trash stuff. There's no reuse services out there. Why don't we go build something that's scalable that could implement this stuff? Hence the kind of birth of Growly and why we decided to launch that. So Growly didn't design our growlers because we didn't have that technical expertise. We were more or less just consultants and people that wanted to do, we're at kind of the zero waste realm. But luckily, you know, Growly started because we saw an opportunity that already existed. Growlers were already being reused. There was already a culture of it in the craft beer community. And so it was easy to piggyback off of that and try to expand that. You know, for somebody who's really into craft beer, having a growler delivered to them would be like, oh, that makes sense to me. And it did for people in that market. So that was very strategic why we entered that. And there were companies already creating these like high tech growlers or better growlers. And we bought our growlers from a company in Portland called Growlerworks. And so our growlers worked fantastic. We didn't have to design anything. We didn't do any R&D. Again, we were kind of a small team and we had piggyback off of that. I saw something on LinkedIn, and I apologize to the people that make it because I forgot the name of the company. But it was a takeout container that the top of it had some sort of air pressure mechanism that made it seal and keep heat and make it, I'm sure, really fresh, the same way anything in kind of a single use sealed, air sealed tight thing keeps things fresh for a long time. But I saw that for takeout food, and then I'm like, oh my goodness, can I get this Indian restaurant to deliver in that thing, please? Because I'm tired of this little plastic styrofoam stuff and things just spilling all over the place and whatnot. So, you know, I think, you know, slowly and slowly these innovations are going to happen, and then people are going to see the opportunity to kind of apply them to different areas.
I love that, Daniel, because, you know, I'm looking at these pictures of growlers online, and they are absolutely beautiful. I mean, this is, it opens up this opportunity for a lot of creativity and artisanship. And I know that one of them that you delivered actually had its own spout. You could just put it in the refrigerator. And I mean, and I'm absolutely salivating just thinking about like really fresh beer. I love beer on tap. And this, I mean, this would be one of the things that I think I would have on my every week list, you know. Just like you go get your groceries every week, I would really look forward to something like this every week, knowing that somebody put some thought into it. And then there's that artisanship, you know, that you could have from like crafted containers. And then this Indian restaurant that you're speaking of, you know, we're kind of laughing, but I think everybody kind of knows what you're talking about, you know, when it comes to those containers that feel like they're going to be ready to melt in your hand. And then of course, they're always full to the top. You know, is there this opportunity, you know, that's untapped with artisanship? You know, this is where people's creativity can really shine. It's not just about, you know, the dollars and the cents, you know, and putting these ideas together, but it's spurring other ideas to come to life because of something that you create. And yes, while reuse is a component of that, I think it kind of goes back to our values, you know. You know, each person has their own set of values, but you know, maybe somebody values, you know, beauty. Maybe someone values, you know, a really good eating experience, you know, for the folks who are foodies, including myself. Maybe someone really values, you know, being in nature and not having to trip over plastic, which kind of leads me to this next, you know, point of conversation around the economics of single use. And I think it was very revealing and part of this write-up you're getting ready to publish when you talk about how single use is actually being subsidized, which is why it, for the moment, is cheaper than reuse. I'm really interested in your perspective on that.
Yeah, so I guess... 2 points there. Let's start with the beauty part. Is single use is a race to the bottom. It's a race to make the cheapest, most mass produced, in a sense, cultureless item for people to consume. Whereas reuse, again, we've talked about that it could be something expensive as long as it's people are sharing the cost over it and has a long life. Could be something beautiful. I mean, there's, like you're saying, you saw a picture of a growler. I guess I'm not sure if people, I guess if you typed in UK growler into your web search, you'd be able to see it. But you're like, oh, wow, my beer's coming in that, you know, that metallic thing with a gold handle and a nice cover and the shine on it with the little dial. It's like, I deserve this. You know, this looks something cool. We like, you know, we like eating dinner in fancy restaurants and getting, we like little details in life to have the fork, to have a little design on it and make it look really nice. We deserve this and people deserve it. You know, we deserve to have art and beauty in our lives, and single use doesn't really provide that at all. In fact, most of it is like pretty ugly. I remember in, Susan Frankel's book called Plastic, A Toxic Love Story. She talks about the plastic chair, and the plastic chair that had one mold, it had no parts. It was just like you put the plastic in and it came out as a chair that became really popular throughout the world. And I forget what European city it was, but they banned that chair from public because it was so ugly. And they said the citizens of this city do not deserve to see something so ugly out on the street. And I was just like, wow. I mean, granted, it's just think of you've probably seen the chair. It's really famous, but just a big plastic thing that has an odd shape. They banned.
I know the chair you're talking about, actually, Daniel, and I can see why they banned it.
But it's just an ugly thing. I mean, is a styrofoam cup any more beautiful? I mean, we kind of look at these like historic, I don't know, you look at any of these TV shows with like, I don't know, the King and Queen of England or something, and you're just the details of the plates and the teacups and all this stuff, it makes it feel fancy. You know, everybody could and should have that experience, and reuse could only provide that experience. Single use cannot. So we deserve a little art in our lives.
Amen. Amen to that.
And then to your point about the government subsidizing single use, this is an inherent disadvantage to upstarts for reuse companies. And so, you know, we're talking about Growly, so we'll continue talking about Growly. We bought our growlers, we filled them, we cleaned them, we filled them, we cleaned them. We never threw them in the trash unless they like shattered and became glass. They were totally outside of the waste and recycling infrastructure for the most part. We didn't really participate in that. But for single use, I mean, all that stuff has to be thrown away all the time. And so whether you're participating in that or not, you are paying the cost and subsidizing people to be using single use, especially the large corporations that either package their stuff in single use or are the single use packaging companies. Virtually every city in the country is subsidizing this stuff for it to be taken care of on two different fronts. The first is for it to actually go into a landfill or for it to be recycled. The second part, and in keeping the theme about beauty, is that this stuff is all over our parks, trails, houses, side of our homes, gutters, highways. I mean, this stuff is everywhere, and people who's paying to pick that up is the taxpayer. And so that's an inherent disadvantage for upstart reuse companies. And doing kind of zero waste consultancy, one of our like strategies early on was like, we could convince an apartment building, a school to recycle more. We could right size the trash bin to make it smaller, use those cost savings to put into compost, make the trash service even smaller. And therefore we're kind of moving things around and putting things in the right bins, but also saving money and moving things strategically. I would hope that in kind of as reuse scales, part of these kind of government contracts is like, hey, we're saving you all money indirectly by not participating in this waste and recycling infrastructure because everything's being reused. We're also paying to clean it. And at the same time, we're still cost competitive with you all. And so, I think it's just an inherent disadvantage. At this point in time, I don't think it would be in the future.
Exactly. And that's really the point. It's just at this point in time. And I know that on the last podcast, we'd mentioned, again, it was a year ago. So folks who didn't have the chance to listen to it, you also knew at that time, Daniel was a new board member to Upstream, and he's still on the board. We're very grateful to have him. And we're really appreciative of, just your creative responsiveness to sustainability and the sort of fresh look on it. And if no one has had a chance to go onto your blog, your Milkman blog, tell us a little bit about that, because it is absolutely hilarious. I'm going to tell this listening audience, if you ever have a chance to either get his emails into the newsletter or read what he has to say on a regular basis, you really have to. So tell us a little bit more about like, what was the origins behind that? And how do you keep it going and so fresh and so funny?
Well, thank you for those kind words, Priscilla. Yeah, so milkmanmodel.com. I was actually have been working on a book about reuse and the milkman model kind of around the same time that I was thinking about Growly. Growly took a long time to get started because we faced some serious alcohol and legal challenges. So we had a lawyer who was part of our team, but also speaking to liquor lawyers, speaking to breweries, making sure that we were safe to participate in. And so that process took a long time. And so I had some free time and I'm like, you know what? Like, there's this idea about reuse and then there's this inherent benefit that it has. And I think that I should share this with the world. And I spent a lot of time in waste and recycling. I was on the board of the Arizona Recycling Coalition for a long time, just kind of being in this space. So like, you know, I'm gonna work on a book about that. But then Growly did get started and things got really busy. And so anyways, I kind of had to put the book down for a bit. But in closing down Growly, I was like, you know what? I still have a desire to finish this. I feel like I still have something to say. And so I'm going to just put out a website, keep myself honest, publish on occasion, and still work on the book. Obviously, the material on the blog is going to be very similar to the material in the book. And it's just a way to keep me honest. And You know, I think that, I guess I have my own philosophy when it comes around, you know, sustainability and whatnot. I think sustainability should be fun, should be inclusive, less doom and gloom all the time. But at the same time, we could be serious about the work that we're doing and have kind of honest conversations. And so anyways, that's kind of the more or less the purpose of the blog, and just kind of using it as a runway, you know, to finally keep myself honest and publish this book. And I appreciate everybody, you know, all the people that are on it right now. They've been interviewing a lot of people, and appreciate, you know, them accepting me and letting me get on their schedule and talk with them, especially people that have been on this podcast. So it's a tight-knit reuse community, and, you know, I'm happy to be a part of it, and really happy to kind of see it grow and keep it moving and, you know, change the world in our unique way.
Well, we love the levity, Daniel, that you give to the sustainability and reuse movement. And we absolutely are appreciative of you leading the way, really, so that others can succeed. And you're doing it in a real way. And, you know, work can be absolutely serious sometimes. But in this instance, you are really just pivoting, I think, on all of these lessons that you've been so gracious to share with the reuse community. And thank you for being such a fabulous guest. We'd love to have you and talk with you in another year to see where you are, especially with the book, and really just to sort of take a perspective on where we've grown. Because I mean, I think we collectively agree that reuse is growing. It's coming to a city near you. And if you see it, then, you know, really just kind of embrace it, because there's a lot of entrepreneurs like you, Daniel, that have been behind getting things to where they can become sustainable and, as we say, at scale. So thank you, listeners, for another podcast joining us here. And with you, Daniel Velez, in the seat. And your website is milkman.com. And that is something that you all absolutely need to check out. And I, for one, have been very, very grateful to get to know you, Daniel, as a board member. Thank you so much for your support. And thank you, listeners of the Indisposable Podcast. Till next time.
And that's our show. If you like what you're hearing, help spread the word. Subscribe to the Indisposable Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Add a review, talk us up. Nobody spreads a message like you. The Indisposable Podcast is brought to you by Upstream, sparking innovative solutions to plastic pollution, envisioning a world without it, and empowering businesses, communities, and individuals to imagine and co-create this future with us. You can find resources mentioned on today's episode, as well as learn more about Upstream's work, at www.upstreamsolutions.org. Follow us on social and join the movement. There's a better way than throwaway.